Peter has had a very active interest in the UFO phenomena since his early boyhood. He actually had his first UFO sighting over St. Louis Municipal Airport in the summer of 1954. That'll do it. And he investigated his first UFO case during the summer of 1965 in Exeter, New Hampshire. Peter has been witness to several anomalous events, possibly UFO-related, including a dramatic sighting over Baja California in February of 1990, several nighttime sightings over Washington State during 92. In addition to being the director of the National UFO Reporting Center, Peter has served as the director of investigations for the Washington chapter of the Mutual UFO Network. And we've got some witnesses coming up to what happened in Phoenix and beyond Phoenix, I would like to add. But first, you know, Peter, because of the last call that I had in this last hour, it was obviously a guy, hoaxing. It was a guy calling up with a strained, he had to have been hurting his throat to do it, saying he was on a galactic ride in some spaceship somewhere. You know, it was an obvious hoax. Now, yeah. That really dovetails into something that you're having a big problem with, and we do have this problem in ufology with people hoaxing things. And it was like right up front there in what you sent me, so I want to take a moment and talk about it. You have a lot of trouble with hoaxes, don't you?
Oh, boy. If it were not for hoaxes, my job would be easy, and this is not an easy job, Art. You're exactly correct. In fact, the problem is getting worse. I don't know exactly why, but my suspicion is it's due in part to the proliferation of cell phones now in the hands of young people.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very, very discouraging. This is not an easy job. Just as some people might think that your job is easy, I suspect it is not that at all, but...
Well, it's my job to make it sound easy, but no, it's not.
It's every night relentless. That's exactly what I face on a UFO hotline. And frankly, it is very disheartening. Some days, fully 50% of the calls that come to our hotline here in Seattle are young kids, insolent, calling on their cell phones, oftentimes calling from a party, all of them all at once to see who can get through to the hotline.
Yeah.
And the person who gets through, more often than not, starts screaming, I mean, some of the worst language I've ever heard in my life. This is every night.
And they've got to make a long-distance call, for the most part, to do that.
Yes.
Mom and Dad? Check you. Where are your children, and why do they have a cell phone? Why are they calling Peter? Now, I sympathize, Peter. This job is difficult enough. The material we're dealing with, without putting up with the hoaxers, and you say half of the calls sometimes are hoaxers. That's awful.
Between 20% and 50% of the calls we're getting are, I estimate, hoaxed or frivolous calls. And you can imagine how much easier my day would be if those calls were to suddenly go away. It would actually be an enjoyable job. But maybe we can talk about this during the third hour tonight. It is really a serious problem, as well as the hoaxed reports that pour in during the school day, almost as if these kids don't have enough work or homework to deal with.
Well, there you are. The problem is more homework, or the answer is more homework.
Or
lots more homework.
We're going to become very unpopular before this program is over. Or more supervision.
More supervision and more homework.
Yeah,
that's it. That's it, kids. Keep calling.
There goes our listener base now.
Well, our listener base just got wiser, that's all.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, Peter, the reason that you do the job and I do the job is because, damn it, they are real.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them. You've seen them. And God knows, on Phoenix that night, the date was?
March 13th, 1997, Thursday night, a night I will never forget.
Nor I.
I expect the same for you.
Nor I.
It was one of the wildest nights I've ever spent on this planet. Never have I seen so many calls come in such a short period of time, and we have the great pleasure of being able to bring at least two or three of those very, very good witnesses to our program tonight. One of the most frustrating things about my job, aside from the hoax calls, is the fact that I don't think many people are paying attention. And even today, 9 years after the Phoenix Lights event, we get calls from people who either have never heard of the Phoenix Lights case or who've heard about it and they've concluded that, well, it must have been those flares that the government told
yes.
us about.
Yes.
And if I have one objective tonight, it is to bring to our listeners here on Coast the evidence that they will need, I believe, that will be adequate for them to conclude whether the Phoenix Lights can be ascribed to a handful of flares 60 miles southwest of Phoenix or whether they cannot.
Well, they couldn't use swamp gas in the Phoenix area. That wasn't going to fly, right? So it had to be flares or something else.
Yes.
And flares seemed to fit the bill. But our government would not lie to us about something of this magnitude, right?
Oh, clearly. I'm sure everybody recognizes that. But after our listeners have listened to actually three witnesses during our first hour and then listened to some of the investigators who have been kind enough to come on to the program with us tonight, I defy anybody to believe the official government story, and we will maybe talk later in the program about what may have been going on in the government that night. They must have been shocked to see five objects go over Phoenix, Arizona, each one of which we estimate to have been the size of an international airport. That's how big they were.
An international airport.
An international airport. These objects were at least one and maybe more like 2 miles in width. I think that's what all investigators agree on. We'll hear some of those investigators in about an hour's time or so.
My God.
But imagine five of those going over Phoenix and surrounding areas. And the most incredible thing, and I hope we get a chance to talk about the press coverage later in the program.
Oh, I promise you, we'll make time, yes.
The most incredible thing is that it created almost no ripple in the news media whatsoever, even when some of the major news media in this country were apprised of what had happened that night and the day following, and they elected to turn their back on it and not cover it.
I know.
It's the most bizarre thing. People think of me, the Coast listeners who've heard me before, probably think of me as a ufologist. In point of fact, I think it's more correct to say that I'm an observer, excuse me, of unusual psychology, human psychology, and unusual societal response to the UFO phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And that strikes me as being more strange than having five gigantic objects go over Phoenix. The fact that it was not covered at all in the national press for almost 3 months is even more bizarre still, in my estimation.
And then the fact that the way it got covered after 3 months astounds me.
Yeah.
Now, do you recall the night itself? Of course, we began early on taking calls here. It was just beyond all imagination, Peter, what went on here on my phones.
Absolutely.
It went berserk, and I'm assuming that your phones did the same thing.
It's one of those rare instances where I don't turn the tape recorder off, Art. I just let it run and answer calls sequentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
So coming up, we've got a couple of witnesses, actually, to what actually happened. It'd be a Sue Watson, Mrs. Sue Watson, and I think Wiz Sue is her daughter. Is that correct, Sue?
That's right. My daughter, Monica.
And also, so Sue and Monica and Stacy Rhodes. And are all of you, Stacy, are you in Phoenix?
No, I'm in Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson. Okay. We've got a little crackle on the line from you there, Stacy.
Yeah, we were trying to get rid of it here.
I see. All right. Yeah. Well, let us begin then. Peter, why don't you do the interview? Sue, you're first.
Okay. Did you want to ask me a question, or did you just want me to...
Well, Peter, how do you want to do it?
Yeah. Well, just a brief preface. These two witnesses are, in my opinion, the best that we've run across in the last 9 years. I invited them on tonight because, number one, they had a wonderful view of the objects that went directly over their heads. Number two, each of them was with four other people. So it's not as though we have just one person telling us what she allegedly saw, and they're excellent witnesses. With that, why don't we start with Sue, who saw the object before Stacy did. Sue up in northern Phoenix, just south of Camelback Mountain, between Camelback Mountain and Sky Harbor Airport, as I remember. And just one last preface, if I may. Any of our listeners who are online who would like to see the actual objects or artist's renditions of what Sue and Stacy are going to be talking about during this hour, they go to our website, ufocenter.com, and click on the link that will lead them to the illustrations that I've taken from my slide presentation. With that, Sue, why don't you just take it from there and describe where you were
and when.
And when you were and with whom and what you saw, please.
Well, actually, my daughter Monica, who's on the phone, drove up to the house because we were all going to go out that night with three of my other children. So she came up and came running into the house and got us all to come out to the front yard. And that is when we first saw the lights coming over Camelback Mountain, and there were probably five big, huge lights in front of this, what I was calling the vehicle, because we didn't know what it was. And it came very slowly over a very big mountain, just literally a mile north of me, maybe.
Sue, you say your daughter's on the line right now?
Yes, Monica's the first one that saw it.
Monica, are you there?
I'm here. Hi.
Hi, Monica.
Hi.
All right, so you're the first one who saw it, right?
I was, yes.
Monica, was it beyond lights? In other words, could you see form in between the lights, perhaps blinking out the stars? Or, in other words, could you make out form beyond lights?
I couldn't see stars through
okay.
Between the lights, if that's what you're asking.
That's what I'm asking.
I couldn't make out an exact shape. The lights were definitely in some sort of form. I guess I've always described it as like a boomerang, like the shape of a boomerang.
If I might ask, how old are you, Monica?
I'm 29.
29, all right.
Yes, so I guess I was 21.
And so there you were looking at, would you call it a craft or many craft?
I would have to say one. It would surprise me if somebody were to say that it were more than one, if they had actually seen it.
So you believe it was one giant craft?
Yeah.
And you stood there and watched it for how long before you ran for the house?
Well, I turned around. As soon as I got out of my car, I turned around, and it obviously caught my eye coming up over Camelback Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
And the first thing I saw was one lights, and then I felt like I saw maybe three, and then five. And I stood there in awe, wondering what it was. And I was almost afraid to turn around and run because I didn't want to miss it.
Right.
And I knew it was unusual because that's not a flight pattern. You would never see an airplane coming over Camelback Mountain heading south like that.
Right.
So I knew that it was something odd and huge, and I was a skeptic for sure, and I just couldn't make out what it was. So I think I probably stood there for 10, 15 seconds before I finally decided to run inside and get the rest of my family.
And that was how many more people?
I think there were four more besides
so
me.
So four, mom and three others came running out with you. And,
right.
And by then, what were you seeing?
By then, it was hovering, I guess, in between Camelback Mountain and our home.
Hovering.
If it was moving, it was moving extremely slowly.
Right.
And at that point, we were just awestruck, to be honest with you. And we just could not figure out what in the world, what kind of craft could be that large, because it took up so much of the sky. And as like you had asked me before, you couldn't see through it. You couldn't see sky past it, like through the lights.
Sue, do you corroborate that? Would your impression be that it was a craft, that there was something solid between the lights?
It was absolutely a craft and something solid, because it was right over us, and we were looking up, and our two boys, my two younger children that were out there, were actually laying on their backs in the yard and just watching it, and we were just watching it, and it was so close. I mean, they were waving. boys, now it was dark outside, but they were waving. It was so close, like maybe somebody up there can see us.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, it was that, it was phenomenal. And then we're just, it was huge. I can't even imagine how many football fields it must have consumed. You know, it's so hard now to, I remember when I called and I was asked how many fists would it take to cover it.
Uh-huh.
And I was just trying to, I went right outside when Peter asked me that. And because I had a long cord on my phone and I ran outside and I was like, oh my gosh, over five or six or seven fists.
So then you were actually on the phone with Peter as you were seeing it.
No, I wasn't. This was later
when
I called the airport here and they gave me his number. He asked me, go look and tell me, would a thumb cover it? And I said, absolutely not. And then he said, would a fist cover it? And I said, absolutely not. And I could still visualize it. It was very, you know, it was just maybe an hour or so, I'm not sure when I called him, that he asked me that question. So I could definitely visualize how much of the space over my house it took up.
That's gigantic.
It's huge.
All right. Did this thing just suddenly disappear? Did it suddenly take off? What did the craft do?
Well, it was going very slow with absolutely no noise. Right,
yeah,
Monica?
Yeah, no, we couldn't hear anything. Yeah, unlike like an airplane that we would hear, like normally hear.
Right.
Or a jet or something, yeah.
So we were out there somewhere, you know, between 3 and 5 minutes watching it. And again, I'm not more than a mile and a half from that mountain that it came over. So it was, and it passed our house, and we could see it. It was so huge. And we're looking at planes. I mean, that's what was weird. You could see jets. Just around in the normal pattern around Phoenix, that, by the way, I went out later and I could cover with my thumb, just to give you an idea. And these are low jets ready to make the circle to go land at Sky Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept watching it approximately, I would guess, down to McDowell, which is 2 miles away from me. And then we were just so fascinated, and all of a sudden, we saw it just jet off. I mean,
just jet south.
All right, now, you see, that's very important. So you actually saw motion. You saw it take off, just like that.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
All right, you see.
It's almost like we just lost it. Like, it just was there, and then it was gone. It just zoomed out. Like,
All of the lights.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The lights were past us by then. The lights were in the front, and you could still see the lights around it. It almost looked like the yellowish kind of amber lights that are in parking lots at night?
Yes. I'm trying to differentiate between flares burning out and a craft taking off, you see.
No, the craft was over our home, and we watched it go south, and then we saw it go very quickly away south. It did not burn out.
What do you two think you saw?
Well, at this point, with no one coming forward, obviously, it's a UFO. At the time, we thought it was something we were going to read about the next morning.
Well, I guess what I mean by that is, do you believe that you saw a craft from another planet, from another galaxy, from another somewhere, not here?
I would say yes, because I've never seen anything so quiet and so large flying in these skies ever in my life. And What would you say?
I gotta admit that before ever seeing anything like this or having experienced this, I was definitely a skeptic. And when we came inside and called the airport, and just because we were curious about what it was, and they couldn't give us an explanation, they said they had picked nothing up on their radar or whatever anywhere in our area.
Did they sound like they had received a lot of calls in addition to yours?
They didn't admit it. They didn't admit it at the time.
No kidding.
They had they kind of acted like we were crazy, to be honest.
Really? now isn't that interesting?
Right. And so they were kind of trying to tone us down, maybe. And then again, like, you know, as my mom had mentioned, given us Peter's number at that point. But yeah, like my mom had said, if no one else can come up with anything, a better explanation, you can't help but I guess wonder what else it could have been, because it was enormous. It was awesome. It was just phenomenal. I mean, it was just nothing like I'd ever seen before.
So you two think you saw a spaceship?
Well, yeah, now I do. I didn't at the time.
At the time, what did you think it was?
I didn't know. I thought it was some new invention that they were seriously going to tell us what went over our city.
Oh, I see. something we had done that would, and the major announcement would be coming soon.
Right, right.
Got it.
Something, if I could cut in here, just for a second, Art. I think Sue saw that object do something just before it streaked off. I'm looking forward to hearing her description of that event. But the curious thing about this object is that shortly after Sue and Monica had seen it, it streaked to the south and passed through the airspace of Sky Harbor Airport.
Once again, from the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, which has been of just inestimable value to us over the years in terms of gathering information, because God knows there isn't much else out there, Peter Davenport. Peter, welcome back. And
thank you.
And our guests, Sue Watson and daughter, Monica and Stacy Rhodes. Now, there was something the craft did just prior to taking off, Peter said. What was that?
Well, I was the only one that saw it. Did you want me to answer this? I'm sorry.
If you're the only one that saw it, absolutely.
Yeah.
I do, yes.
I was looking at the front of it because it was so fascinating. And, you know, the younger kids were running around and looking at it. And I was looking at it going south, and I saw this flash of light out of the right side of it. And it would almost remind you of like a laser that just shot down to the ground. And I was, you know, I got all excited. I said, did you guys see that? And they were looking. It was that big to where you would miss something like that. And unfortunately, the kids didn't see it, and it didn't do it again, but it was really, really something. But I remember that because I told him that night, that I was the one that saw this flash, and it did. It almost looked like a laser beam went down, which I know sounds strange, but I saw it. So,
all right.
That I saw.
All right. I think we've got a pretty, very good description from the two of you, and completely believable. So I want to thank you both for being here. Well, wait a minute. Hang on a line. You might want to compare notes because we have Stacy Rhodes here. And Stacy actually is, I think, in, is it Tucson?
Yes.
Uh-huh, Tucson, Stacy. So would this be, by the way, let's compare notes, at about the same time, or was there a time difference in when?
My sighting was around 8:30 at night.
All right. And Sue?
Mine was before that, somewhere from 8:20, 8:25.
Well, that's pretty close. Okay, Stacy, what did you see in Tucson?
Well, actually, I was on I-10, or just outside of Casa Grande, Arizona, near the Sacaton Mountains, and a very good friend of mine was driving the car. My mother was in the passenger seat.
Okay, is that close to Tucson, or?
Closer to Phoenix.
Closer to Phoenix, all right.
It's about midway, and I had my daughter in the back seat passenger side, and her friend was in the my daughter was driver's seat, and her friend was passenger seat, and
right.
I was rear middle.
Right.
And at about 11 o'clock, coming right off the Sacaton Mountains, my friend said, who was driving, exclaimed, "What in the hell is that?" And we saw three lights coming off the top of the mountain. And then it proceeded to come across over the mountain, and there were five lights, three in the very front of the craft, and then one on each wingtip.
Sue, does that jive?
Yeah, it does, because it was the shape of a boomerang, so you could see where the ends wouldn't, you know, be seen right away at
okay.
one point, where I was straight on coming over the mountain, so I pretty much saw them.
All right, well, you would have been seeing it from different angles,
right.
I presume. Stacy, okay, so you've got a total of five lights now.
Yes, we've got a total of five lights, and it's still north-northwest of us, but then it came right over I-10, and we're heading north on I-10 going 80 miles an hour, and the nose of this craft finally came over the roof of my car, and we had a straight-on view of it.
Really?
It was amazing.
All right, and again, Stacy, this is a very important question, because the explanation, of course, was flares. Is there any way what you saw were flares, or did you see the body of a craft?
I saw the body of a craft.
Hello. Okay.
And I actually saw seams when we were underneath it. And
oh my God, really?
Yes. And I did have a 35 millimeter camera.
Oh.
I was attempting to take pictures, but the object was so huge that even one orb or one light completely filled my lens to where it, I couldn't even take a picture. Someone would have thought I took a close-up of a light.
Stacy, how, I hear you, how close would you say the craft was to you? How high in the sky?
If it was... No more than 2,500 feet.
And would you agree with Sue and Monica as to the size of this thing?
My first estimation from wingtip to wingtip was 3 miles. And from nose to the flat edge that went over me, I estimated at about 1.5 to 2 miles.
God.
We were underneath it for 1 to 2 minutes.
And you were driving.
The nose went over us till the time the edge exited over the back end of my car.
Man.
It was at least 1.5 minutes.
And how fast were you going, do you estimate, Stacy?
75 miles an hour plus.
Huh.
And it was going the opposite direction, and
at
you estimate you were
slow hover
under it for 1 to 2 minutes.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, that thing is gigantic. She's doing better than 1 mile a minute, fair amount better than 1 mile a minute.
At a stationary object.
And you could, now this is very interesting. You could see, you said seams. Is there any way you can get any more descriptive? I mean, that's very good already, but seams.
Like a ship's hull.
Oh.
I agree.
Oh, you do?
Absolutely. There were lights all the way around it. It was totally illuminated.
And I agree with Sue. I saw the 3 lights on the front and then the 1 on each wingtip, a total of 5 lights.
Well, either one of you, Sue or Monica, did you see what you would call seams?
Well, seams being the outline of a vehicle from the back, it was totally lit up. Not in those big, huge lights you've seen on the news, but I'm telling you, it was totally lit up all the way around that boomerang shape, all the way to the back, everywhere. And it was like this structure, and that's why the boys were waving. They almost thought there must be someone that can see us, because you could see the vehicle, and it was just... I don't know what we were seeing, but we were definitely seeing lights all the way around. Not those big spotlights in the front, but
right.
I mean, there were lights all the way, even on the back.
Got it.
And because you couldn't see past the sky, past it, you had to assume it was solid.
Right. Well, Stacy, though, saw seams. I mean, that's pretty indicting, Stacy. Stacy, what was your impression of what you were seeing? I mean, to be driving under something this size, and you know, you knew because of how quickly you were driving the scale of what you were seeing. How did that settle in on you? What did you think you were seeing?
Something from out of this world. My heart sunk at first, and then we turned off the radio. The children in the back seat both rolled down the windows and stuck their heads out, and like Sue said, there was no noise whatsoever. And this thing was right above our heads, and
there was no way to stop the car, Stacy, and just get out and look up.
I don't know why we did not stop. There was no conversation going on. I don't know if we were all scared and heading in the opposite direction, thinking, okay, if this is going that way, we should be going the other way.
I hear that. Yes.
So I don't know why we didn't stop. In retrospect, I wish I would have. I wish I would have taken a picture of the light, even though it would have probably been undiscernible. And the color of the light, like Sue said, the only thing I can describe it to is when the harvest moon rises, the weird orange mm-hmm. color it has when it's right on the horizon.
Yes.
That's
absolutely
what it looked like.
The same
it
color.
It would not come into focus. It was like watery or hazy.
Yeah. You obviously agree on the details here. You obviously saw the same thing.
The lights in the front were clearer, and the ones that went all the way around the vehicle were more like I say, those parking lot lights, that kind of a yellowish...
Yeah, the amber, the harvest
the amber
color.
Uh-huh.
All right. Peter, anything else we need to ask?
Question for Stacy. You were on the highway. There were obviously other cars there.
Yes.
Was anybody else visibly paying attention to this thing?
No, I was amazed. I would have thought people would have been pulling over or having accidents. Nobody seemed to be paying any attention.
That's bizarre.
And another thing Sue had mentioned was, could you cover this object with a fist? I could not. If I laid on my back and opened a newspaper, I could not cover this object out. It completely engulfed my field of view.
Yeah, that's the whole sky.
The whole sky. The entire sky, and I watched it as it came over the front tip. I watched as it blotted out the stars. Then I got to see the underneath of it. For over a minute, I just sat and stared at this thing, and then directly as the back edge went over me, I sat up to turn around to see it, and there was nothing. I saw no gaseous fumes, no afterburners, and nothing.
Have you seen Independence Day either?
I compare it to that, but I don't like to, because then it seems more like I'm following the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was that big. It would crush downtown Tucson, not all of Tucson, but downtown Tucson. It could not have landed on I-10 in an emergency.
I'm sure
not
glad
even on
it
both
didn't.
Sides.
Yeah, I've got it. That's just an astounding, astounding witness description from all of you. So, listen, I want to thank Sue and Monica and Stacy for sort of setting the stage for us. And I don't believe, have any of you been on here before with me?
I've been on with you on Dreamland one time.
Oh,
Mark.
My God, that was a long time ago.
I've got a copy of the tape.
Right, okay. Well, listen, again, thank you both.
Well, thank you, and thank you for keeping this question alive. I would like to know what it was I saw.
Boy, do we have to keep it alive. Thank you. And Peter, with respect to keeping it alive, I guess in a way that's what we're doing tonight. We have yet another witness. And a lot of people don't know that even though we call it the Phoenix Lights, that night I was taking calls from just over the hill in Las Vegas, massive numbers of calls, and we have a Las Vegas witness tonight, don't we?
We do indeed, and the interesting thing about the next witness is that she saw something similar to what Sue and Monica and Stacy just described to us, except it was not on the 13th of March, it was the night before,
mm-hmm.
March 12th, Wednesday, that she saw similar objects going over Las Vegas headed to the east. And I'm looking forward to having her share this new information. Many people do not realize that this event occurred not just over one state, but over several days in different parts of our country, it appears from my vantage point.
It was a whole flap, and we'll cover more of that. But right now, here is Dorothy from Las Vegas, Nevada, just over the hill. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi.
So the day before the big Phoenix Lights brouhaha, you saw what, when, and where? You're going to have to yell at us, hon. You're real close to the phone.
On March 12th, after 8 p.m., my neighbor and I were standing outside talking, and at about between 8:15 and 8:40 p.m., out on our driveway, I was looking west. I noticed out of the corner of my eye several bright lights up in the sky, and my neighbor and I looked up, and I couldn't believe what we were seeing. There was a relaxed V formation of white to off-white or pale yellow lights headed our direction. And we both couldn't move, gazing up and discussing between each other what we were seeing and agreeing what we were seeing. The difference between the Las Vegas sightings, the Las Vegas lights, and the Phoenix lights are this. There was no substance whatsoever between the Las Vegas lights, and there were many more of them in a V shape. We could see the night stars and the sky through the formation. They kept in cadence in a relaxed V shape and continued over directly overhead.
How many lights?
I would say well over a dozen.
A dozen?
Well over a dozen.
And they kept a formation of a V?
Of a relaxed V, more like a U almost.
Got it.
Formation. And in cadence. Right in step with each other as they came over. I would estimate they were probably going 30 to 50 miles an hour when they approached us and went directly overhead, east-northeast towards Nellis Air Force Base.
Well, what about Peter's famous question, the size of your thumb if you hold it out, or your fist, or...
Right. Also, our formation was quite large. Our major intersections on my end of town are 1 mile apart, and at first, when we first saw the lights, I thought, good Lord, it's the size of a couple of football fields wide. But as it approached our position and went overhead, I would say it went from Cheyenne to Craig Road. It must have been well over a mile wide. A fist doesn't get it. As the previous guest mentioned, a newspaper held up in front of your face would probably be about right. It was huge. It was very wide, very silent. It was a silent night on March 12th, anyway, and we strained to hear anything, and with our mouths hanging open, it went directly overhead and just proceeded without pausing. That's another difference between us and the Phoenix lights. It did not pause. It did not stop. It just marched silently overhead and continued east-northeast.
Peter, did you get many reports from the Las Vegas area that night?
No. In fact, I got only one or two, Art, and that's the mystery of this thing, is how something like that can go over a major city at between 8:14 and 8:40 p.m., and we get only one light. There are many, many things about my job that are more a mystery than anything else, and I don't understand how that can happen, except to say, after what we just heard from the Phoenix area, it occurs to me that huge objects can go over a major U.S. city
without
and we never
noticed.
Hear about it.
Well, I think I know why, and I've said this many times, and I'll say it again. People going about their daily lives, whether they're in a vehicle or they're, you know, in the middle of some kind of job or doing a task or whatever, they look straight ahead. If they're driving, they look at the road, they look at the cars, they look at a lot of things, but they don't look at the sky. And even if they're walking, they tend not to look at the sky. People look at what's in front of them, not above them. And I honestly think that's how it happens, Peter. I don't know what other possible explanation there could be.
Yeah, I know. Now, probably many of our listeners are saying, well, there's a good likelihood that Dorothy is mistaken on the date. And I'd like her to address that issue. In fact, she probably remembers when she and I first talked back in March of 97, I assumed, and I assumed in error, that she had gotten the date wrong in citing March 12th. I assumed that she had just skipped a day, as we often do. But could you tell us, please, Dorothy, how can you be sure that it was March 12th, that Wednesday night, and not March 13th?
March 12th is my brother's birthday.
There you go.
He had been at my home a few hours earlier, having cake and ice cream and taking a picture. And it was a couple of hours after he had left when this whole thing occurred. And the next night, and after this fighting, I might add, I ran in and called Nellis Air Force Base. The airman that answered said he was in the basement, so he probably couldn't see anything anyway, and directed me to the UFO reporting, the National UFO reporting site. And then I called KLAS-TV, Channel 8, locally.
Right.
And they hadn't seen anything. So I did call you, and then March 13th, the Phoenix light sightings, and of course I always listen to Art Bell. I was listening to the program and I could not believe what I was hearing.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like the same thing, you know, 24 hours after what I had seen, exactly, nearly. So March 12th was his birthday, and there's no doubt about it. And I know you questioned me over and over, and I was getting a little irritated because I know what I saw, I don't know what I saw, but I know I saw something, but I know when I saw it.
Yes, and you got a good look at it, and the objects you saw in that huge formation, Dorothy, were they self-luminous, or is there any possibility that they might have been, for example, migratory birds in a wedge-shaped formation?
Oh, that's hilarious. Peter, no. I don't know if they were luminescent, because that's light emission without heat. They were more almost, maybe they were bioluminescent for all I know, but they were rather lustrous or brilliant, like bright pearls.